I am going to give a brief introduction to the history of astronomy and infrared astronomy, and then Matt Griffin is going to talk about the Herschel project, and Mike Barlow is going to talk about scientific results from the Herschel project. So I will launch off on my brief history of infrared astronomy, and I hope that, yes, excellent. Now, if I walk around, can you still hear me? Can you still hear me at the back? Is my lapel mic on? Yes, good. Okay, excellent. So infrared astronomy began in 1800 when William Herschel, who was actually an amateur astronomer who started off as a musician, but he got interested in astronomy, and he did the experiment that you can see up on this screen here. The sun, he had the sunlight coming in through a hole in the wall or in the blind. He had a prism in front of it, and the prism split the light up into the colors of the rainbow, as you know. So that's Newton's experiment. But what Herschel did was he put a thermometer in different parts of the spectrum. He has three thermometers here, one that's going to be in the spectrum, and the other two are sort of reference thermometers to see whether the temperature's changed. And what he found was, as he went towards the red end of the spectrum, the temperature increase got higher. So there was more heat coming at the red end of the spectrum. So he then did a second experiment where he moved the thermometers beyond the red end of the spectrum and found that the thermometer went up even further. And so he concluded that there is some kind of invisible light beyond the red end of the spectrum, which we now call infrared radiation. So that was the first discovery of radiation, infrared, electromagnetic radiation, that's not visible. So we now know there is a whole spectrum of electromagnetic radiation, and on the lower panel, you can see that it goes all the way from X-rays on the left. Basically, this is a plot of the transmission of the Earth's atmosphere. So where it's gray, there isn't any transmission. So on the left, there's X-rays. None of that gets through. Then you see a white blob, which is the optical window, the visible window, which we use for vision. And then you see a number of white spikes sticking up. And these are little windows where we can work in the infrared. And so Herschel basically started sort of at the right end of the optical spectrum and went a little way in the infrared. He probably went to about 0.9 microns. Well, we now define rather arbitrarily the infrared band as going from 1 micron, a wavelength of 1 micron, to 1,000 microns. Beyond that, we go into microwaves, radio, and so on. And in the radio band, again, the atmosphere is transparent. So you can see there's this very big chunk of the infrared spectrum where no light gets through the atmosphere at all. The Earth's atmosphere absorbs infrared radiation. It's partly carbon dioxide, around 1 to 10 microns. Beyond that, it's mainly water vapor. And this absorbing of infrared light is responsible for the greenhouse effect. So you can see that to do astronomy in these bands where no light gets through, we have to go to space. I'll come to that in a second. Now, using different wave bands, all the way from X-ray to radio, allows us to sample the universe, things in the universe, at different temperatures. And what's shown here is a series of plots of intensity against wavelength for different temperatures. So again, X-rays, X-rays on the left and microwaves on the right. And so we have at the top there 1,000,000 degrees, and that's emitting in the X-rays. Then 100,000 degrees, ultraviolet, 10,000 degrees, sort of blue visible light, and then 1,000 degrees, then we're starting to come into the infrared range. So the near infrared is 1,000, 100, 10 Kelvin, which is very cold, 10 degrees above absolute zero, minus 260 centigrade, that would be in the submillimeter region. So we're looking in infrared, we're looking at things with temperatures between 3 and 3,000 degrees typically. And we're looking at the cool universe, especially we're looking at emission from dust around and between the stars. And now here are some of the tools of the trade. So we do have ground-based telescopes. I haven't shown you conventional optical telescope, which would work in the near-infrared as well. But what I'm showing you here is some of the space missions that have worked in the infrared. So top left is IRAS, the infrared astronomy satellite, the first space mission to do a survey of the whole sky in the mid-infrared. Next to it along the top is ISO, the European Infrared Space Observatory. I'm going to say a bit more about these. Then we have the telescope at the top right is the James Clerk Maxwell Telescope, the UK's telescope in Hawaii, which works at submillimeter and millimeter wavelengths. Bottom left, the famous Herschel that we're going to hear about this evening. And then middle of the bottom, the Spitzer Telescope, which I'll say a little bit about. And then down here, we have the future, well, it's almost upon us, the ALMA telescope. So this is the ALMA Millimeter Array Telescope currently being built in the Atacama Desert in South America. So Herschel discovered infrared radiation in 1800 from the sun, and the progress for the next 150 years was incredibly slow. So the next astronomical object detected was the moon, but that wasn't until 1856, until Piazzi Smyth managed to detect radiation from the moon. And there were various attempts in the 19th century to detect infrared radiation from the brightest stars, but none of them although there were claims, they probably weren't correct. And the first reliable detection of infrared radiation from another star was in 1901, Ernest Nichols. Well, the pioneer of modern infrared astronomy, the first of the major works in the field, was Harold Johnson, and he defined the various infrared wave bands used by astronomers, and he and his group observed several thousand stars in the 1950s. Well, then in the 1960s, there were two great pioneers of infrared astronomy, Jerry Neugebauer, shown on the left, who with Bob Layton carried out the 2-micron survey of the whole northern sky in 1969. People told him he was wasting his time. All he'd do is see a lot of stars. But actually, a number of very exciting new objects were found, especially stars in the process of dying, red giant stars in the process of dying, and also stars in the process of being born. Well, then the other great pioneer of this period is Frank Lowe. And he pioneered mid and far infrared and submillimeter observations, and he's shown here in a Learjet that he used for some of these observations to get above the atmosphere. Well, now I'm jumping through hundreds of many groups that started to work on infrared astronomy in the 1970s, and I'm jumping through that to the IRAS mission, which was launched in 1983, and the top right is the photo of the launch, which I was present at, which is a very exciting moment. And IRAS made many wonderful discoveries in infrared astronomy and really opened up the infrared universe to us. And we're still using data from IRAS today, in fact. Top left is a comet that IRAS discovered. Bottom left shows the Horsehead Nebula, as seen in the optical on the left and in the far infrared on the right. Well, now, IRAS surveyed the whole sky, as I said, at wavelengths from 12 to 100 microns. This is every dot on the upper picture is a source of radiation. Along the band along the middle is the Milky Way, and the white dots are regions where new massive stars are forming. The swathe of blue dots are red giant stars. And then all over you see some red stuff, which is cool dust clouds. And then you see, in fact, you also see the Magellanic Clouds, two white dots in the lower part. But all over the picture you see green dots, which are galaxies. So this was a wonderful survey of infrared galaxies through the whole universe. So something like 60,000 galaxies. And we use these to study cosmology and weigh the universe. Well, now, there's a string of exciting discoveries that IRS made. The first one shown here, we knew it must be there, but it was still very exciting to see it, and that is infrared emission from the dust that spread between the stars, and we called it the infrared cirrus. So here it is. You can see it looks like the clouds in the sky, but these are not clouds in the sky. This is clouds of dust between the stars being lit up by the stars and radiating in the infrared. This shows regions where new stars are forming. This is actually in the Large Magellanic Cloud. You see all the white splodges where very massive new stars are forming. This shows the extraordinary difference between the infrared sky and the visible sky. On the left is the visible picture of the Orion constellation, which you're probably familiar with. There's the Orion's belt and the sword. And then on the right is the IRAS picture of the same region. It's completely different. There are these huge clouds of dust and molecules in the yellow patches where new stars are forming. And the Orion Nebula is this very bright... the star formation around the Orion Nebula is this very bright white spot here. You can't really see the stars of the Orion constellation except Betelgeuse. You can just see Betelgeuse in the infrared, but the other ones you hardly see. Totally different landscape. Now, one of the exciting things IRAS found was debris disks around stars. So in our solar system, we know about the asteroid belt. We now know about the Kuiper belt. We know about the zodiacal dust. There's a lot of dust and bits of stuff, comets, asteroids. What IRAS discovered was stuff like that around other stars. And essentially, on the left is what different configurations would look like in their spectrum. So at the top, you just have a star on its own. On the bottom, you have a star with a ring of stuff around it. You just get a blip in the infrared. So the infrared is on the right. You see the lower blip is the emission from this ring. That's how that was discovered by IRA. Something like that was found around the bright star Vega, which was the first of the debris disks to be discovered. And on the right, we have two pictures taken with the Hubble Space Telescope of these debris disks discovered by IRS. And there's a scale that's set, I don't know whether you can read it, but the ellipse is the orbit of Neptune. And so what we're looking at basically is something like the Kuiper belt out beyond the planets. So JCMT, I mentioned that in my summary of the tools. This was came onto line in the 1980s, and when a new instrument, SCUBA, came on stream, we were able to use it to do surveys for infrared galaxies, and this shows a couple of maps that various collaborations that I was part of made. And these galaxies are extremely distant and powerful. They're 100 times more powerful than our galaxy in their total light output. And we can see them right through the universe. The next mission I want to mention is the Infrared Space Observatory, which flew from 1995 to 1998. So the telescope is shown on the left. This made many interesting discoveries. We were able to make deeper surveys than we had with IRAS. And the great new addition was spectroscopy, and this shows the spectrum from a galaxy. It's an active galaxy with a massive black hole in it, and we see features of the connected with the active galaxy, and also we can see other atomic features from hot gas and so on. So the lines are a tremendous diagnostic tool, which I'm sure we'll hear more about later from Herschel. Well, then the final mission the final pre-Herschel mission I'm going to mention is SPITZER. This was a NASA mission launched in 2003. It's still taking data, though, only with the shortest wavelength instruments because the coolants run out. It's on a very weird orbit, illustrated on the top right, in that that's the Earth on the right there, and Spitzer was kind of thrown away from the Earth, and it's trailing behind the Earth, getting further and further away from it. And I think in about 200 years' time, we shall meet it again. So Spitzer made wonderful maps, and at the bottom, the middle of the bottom, is Spitzer's version of the Large Magellanic Cloud with even more detail. And on the left is the Orion Nebula region, shown in wonderful detail. The dust debris disk story continued. Here is Fomalhaut, which is a pretty bright star, and that has a circumstellar disk. It was detected by IRAS. It was confirmed by the James Clerk Maxwell telescope with the image on the right, which showed a ring. So that was demonstrating that it really was like our own Kuiper belt. And then in Spitzer, the map at 24 microns, a shorter wavelength, didn't show any hole, didn't show a ring, was continuous. And that shows there must be dust in the interior of the system, rather like our zodiacal dust cloud. So we're beginning to see analogies between these systems and our own solar system. And this is the Fomalhaut debris disk imaged with the Hubble Space Telescope. The central star is shown as just a little dot. Of course, the star is absolutely much brighter than the disk and has to be occulted out in order to make this image. And there's a little inset here. I don't know what that white mark is. It's not on the slide. But there's a little inset box which is blown up here. And here is the motion of one of Fomalhaut's planets. So we've now discovered planets around other stars, and we can even image them. And infrared has played an important part in search for exoplanets. Probably don't have time to talk about that this evening. Now, I want to show a rather wonderful simulation that was made by the Spitzer team. So this is a dust cloud, called the Elephant's Trunk. And it's a dark globule. So the lower left is for how it looks in visible light. So you've got emission from stars and so on. And then there's this very black region, which is a dust cloud, which is obscuring the light. And you can see something like that in the middle of the Milky Way in the coal sack. Anyway, this is a little globule. And in it, there are a pair of newly formed stars that have created a little cavity. Well, it's actually, you see it in the top thing there. Now, so I'm going to show this animation. And what it is it's going in wavelength. So we're starting off the visible image with the black cloud obscuring the stars behind it and looking dark. And then we're going to move in wavelength into the infrared. And as we do so, we start to see the dust shining at us. So here we go. So there's the dark cloud. Okay, we're in the visible light at the moment. And now we're coming into, probably oxygen emission. And now we're starting to see the dust shining at us, and we're coming out to the longer wavelengths, out to 24 microns, and we see the dust cloud shining at us. Previously, the cloud, in the optical, the cloud is just obscuring the light, and now we see the actual light from the cloud. I'll just show that again. So here we are, we're in visible light. We get a flash from some line. Then we're coming into the infrared part. Now we start to see, we're around a wavelength of a few microns. We start to see emission from dust. We're going out to longer wavelengths, and we see the full glory of the dust cloud with all its detail. And in the middle of it, various stars, which are newly formed and heating it up. So the spectrum of radiation, the variation intensity of wavelength, is a wonderful diagnostic tool, as I've mentioned. And this is a newly formed star, a Herbig Haro object. And in the spectrum, we see the features of water ice, methyl alcohol, methane gas, silicate dust, water ice again, and carbon dioxide ice. So we from different bits of the spectrum, we could see what there is in the dust cloud around this star. Well, now here's a whole galaxy. This is the Messier 81 galaxy. And it's the picture is an infrared picture. It's made up of wavelengths 3.6, 8, and 24 microns in different colors. And we see in the middle the older stars shining. And then in the spiral arms are made up of new stars, young stars, and dust clouds. Shining out of, well, it's actually the dust clouds that we're seeing. And here is a longer wavelength version of the same, and we'll see much more beautiful ones from Herschel in a minute. This is another spectrum, this time of a much more distant galaxy. What I showed you before was a newly forming star nearby. This is a galaxy out at, it's a very luminous galaxy out at redshift 0.3. And here we see, again, these ices, carbon dioxide, carbon monoxide, water ice. We see features due to hydrocarbons, we see neon gas, and we see molecular, in the little red blip at the bottom, a feature of molecular hydrogen. So the spectra are fantastic diagnostic. Now, Spitzer made a big emphasis on legacy programs. That's to say, programs that were designed to get large chunks of data and then share it with everybody pretty quickly. And so there were a string of these legacy programs right from the beginning of the mission. The one that I was involved with was called SWIRE. This is the SINGS legacy program, where they imaged about 50 nearby galaxies. And this is a montage of the Spitzer infrared images of all these galaxies. So they're very beautiful, just as beautiful as the optical images that you can see. And it's arranged in a tuning fork, which was invented by Hubble, where you have the elliptical galaxies are the arm of the tuning fork. The top prong are ordinary spiral galaxies, and the bottom prong are barred spiral galaxies. And then the regular ones get put down on the lower left here. And so these are the different types of galaxies which tell you something about the star formation history of the galaxy and what stage they're at. The SWIRE legacy program on Spitzer focused on surveying about 50 square degrees of the sky, about the size of the moon, basically, and it was in a series of different patches, and these are shown in red. So these red patches with a label on it are the areas of the sky where we did these very deep surveys. And we chose the cleanest, darkest sky we could find. So the color map is a map of 100 micron radiation made with IRAS. Again, so pretty much like the picture we saw before with the Milky Way down the middle and all the dust from the Milky Way shining at us in a huge extent. And then the blue bits are where there isn't much dust. So those are the cleanest parts of the sky. That's the place to do surveys in the far infrared and submillimeter. And that's what... And we... this is one kind of summary of that program. We, in this survey of 50 square degrees, we identified over a million galaxies, and we estimated their redshift, how fast they're moving away from us, which also gives distance. So, and the histograms show the spread of redshifts that we saw in this survey. So, mostly they're out to redshift, not they're out to redshift 2, but there's a few galaxies much further. And here is this was not found in our survey, but with very very focused experiment. But it's a detection with Spitzer of one of the most distant galaxies in the universe at a redshift of 7. And this is really spectacular because the Spitzer telescope is only 70 centimeters in size. It's a tiny little telescope. It's practically the one you could have in your back garden. And yet, because it's working in the infrared, it's able to see right to the edge of the universe and see this extremely distant galaxy. So the Spitzer points are the two black circles here, and these are other measurements at shorter near-infrared wavelengths, and the coloured curves are different models for this high redshift galaxy. So, well, that's more or less my introduction. I think I've kept to time. Nobody's shown me any signs saying it's I've overrun. And I was asked to conclude with the future, as it were. Well, the future is already here. It's ALMA. So I showed a picture of the ALMA telescope, which is being constructed. It's going to have 64 different antennae. It's working at millimeter and submillimeter wavelengths. And on the right here, we have the Hubble Space Telescope image of two galaxies that have crashed together. So there's two spiral galaxies which are destroying each other. And on the left, we have ALMA's submillimeter image. And this is the detail's not quite as good as the Hubble Space Telescope yet, because they haven't got all their dishes. When they have all their dishes, it'll achieve the same resolution as Hubble Space Telescope. And the thing to note is that where it's really bright with ALMA, it's dark over here. So that's where all the stars are forming, in this dark area. So where these galaxies have collided together, the gas is compressed, new stars are forming. In the optical, we don't see anything. Well, we see the distortions of the galaxy. We don't see the new stars. We have to go to these wavelengths to see them. Well, shamelessly, I'm just going to put up this picture about a book I've written about the history of infrared astronomy, which happens to be coming out next month. So you might just, if this has whetted your appetite, then you can get that when it comes out. Thank you very much.